It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 1 week from today, the Carnegie of Homestead Music Hall will host stand-up comedian and actor Paul Reiser. Mr. Reiser is well known for being the creator and star of the hit NBC sitcom Mad About You. He's also appeared in memorable movies such as Diner, Beverly Hills Cop, and Aliens, and can be seen as Dr. Elliot Pelman in the recently released Concussion. He joins us now by phone from Los Angeles. Paul Reiser, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Now, let me clarify something just so I understand it. Having grown up in New York, we were used to Carnegie Hall. We say Carnegie Hall. But now you say Carnegie of Homestead Music. What happened? And I know he's from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So I want to know what happened between Pittsburgh and New York that the pronunciation got changed.
I think it's the Scottish. Carnegie.
Carnegie. It is somewhere around on the Jersey Turnpike that just said, yeah, Carnegie. Yeah.
I think so.
All right. I will make sure I say it properly when I'm there.
Yeah. Or you can poll the audience either way, whatever they prefer.
I like to start trouble as soon as I get there.
Exactly. Well, you know, is the essence of your appearance next week, is it part of a return to your roots as a stand-up comedian?
You know, it is. It wasn't planned as a big festival of returning. I just always... I always thought of myself as a comic. That's what I started doing. It's all I wanted to do. And I kind of got distracted from it. And it was really like in 92 when Mad About You started, I got kind of consumed and busy doing that. And that's all I did. And then when it was over, I was really looking forward to laying low for a while. But in my head, I said, I got to get back. I got to get back to stand up. But one thing led to another. I just got distracted and forgot to get back to it until about 3 years ago. I just said, let's do it. I started as I did when I was 19. I just had, you know, 5 minutes of stuff, and I would go down to the clubs. It was a little nicer now. At least, you know, they know me, so they would say, sure, you can go on stage. And I didn't have to wait till 2 o'clock in the morning as I did when I was 19, which is good because I'd be asleep. And it really just took it from there. So there was no great plan other than I really missed doing it. And I'm having a blast. As much fun as everything else in TV and movies is fun, there's nothing like getting out on stage in front of a live audience.
Well, right. And they say it's one of the scariest or can be one of the most intimidating things that you can do in the world of performing. And I've tried it. And a couple times, you know, you might be standing there and the lights are in your face and you can kind of see the audience, but you can't. And there are those moments where you're like, where am I going?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I would imagine is harder? Open heart surgery. I would think that would be scary.
Because
you're looking and you're going, wow, I could kill this guy. I don't really know what I'm doing. I think the people who are drawn to stand-up, who do stand-up and who can't do anything, who won't do anything besides stand-up, you know, it's not even a question. Like, so yeah, there are nights in the beginnings that you go, wow, that was unpleasant. And still, you know, there is still once in a while a gig that you'll go, oh, that was not joyful. But, you know, there's a reason that we do it. There's a reason that we're drawn to it. And for me, it was sort of an eye-opener to realize how much I actually had missed doing it, more than I suspected. And the minute I got back, I felt like, yeah, this is really the most fun.
Who were the comedians that inspired you growing up?
You know, when I was... George Carlin was huge. Robert Klein was huge. And, you know, though they were not classic comics and stand-ups, but Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner were big influences for me. You know, when I was 15, somebody older said, "Oh, you don't know the 2,000-year-old man album, Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner," and they said, "We got to play that." And once I heard that, it was like the Rosetta Stone. It's like, oh, okay. It just kind of opened up my brain into comedy. And Woody Allen was certainly a big influence too.
Right, and he's you've been involved recently in a project with him, which we'll get to a little later in the conversation. Your big break in the movies came when director Barry Levinson cast you in the classic film Diner, and that movie has so much incredible dialogue and such well-defined characters.
Yeah,
go ahead, Paul.
No, it was a very dialogue-heavy movie, and at the time, it was sort of way ahead of its time, in that there weren't a lot of movies that were so soft on story and strong on just quirky characters, and that was really what made it pop, and what made it unique was that it sounded like just guys talking, and nobody had done that prior to that.
Could a movie like Diner get made today and be as successful, striking a chord with audiences?
It's interesting. You know, certainly there's a studio system that is much more prone to making the big blockbusters and so on. But at the same time, you know, you look around, there's a lot of great little movies that I'd like to think certainly people can do it. There are people who are making small movies, you know. I saw this movie, Brooklyn, which is nominated for a couple of awards, and It's like, well, that's a really tiny movie, and I loved it because it was so small. It's like, you know, I can only watch so many exploding movies and car chase movies. I'm like, oh, I actually just like this was about a person and a journey. They're making them all the time. But at the time, it was unique, and I remember they were, at that time, it was the early 80s, and the studios were hoping for a movie like Porky's. They were thinking it was going to be like a sex romp, guys, and they watched this and went, what is this? These are guys sitting around drinking coffee talking about nothing. Well, yeah, well, that's kind of the point of the movie. So it was very much ahead of its time.
Paul, you were one of a handful of comedians who, in the 1990s, were given the opportunity to create their own sitcoms. And in your case, it was NBC's hit show, Mad About You, with Helen Hunt. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about how that developed and how having so much say in the process ultimately contributed to the show's success?
Interesting question. It came about, I had been approached by one of the studios that had seen me in a few things and said, well, why don't you write something for yourself? And I had just done another show, and I thought, well, if I wasn't eager to do a show, but I thought if I was, it would want to be something small and something, you know, at the time, my stand-up act was all about what I was going through. And my wife, we were actually just newlyweds, and I said, well, that's the kind of show that I wanted to do. And I really just started writing that. And fortunately, it was the kind of thing, it wasn't very high concept at all, it was very low concept, but when we went to pitch it to studios, everybody had a story. They go, oh, listen to this. You know, I'd say it's about the little arguments that married couples get into or the issues that come up. And because it was so universal, of course, everybody says, oh, man, you think that's fine? Listen, my mother-in-law comes over and stays, you know, and they all have a story. So there was a lot of interest in doing that, and it was, you know, by design, I said, I'm going to make my character exactly like me so I don't have to talk, I don't have to act too much. And that was sort of a safety valve. But it was, you know, it started, you know, it came out of my marriage and my material, but we had the great staff of writers and producers, and everybody would bring in their stuff. And everyone, you know, listen to this conversation we had in my house, or listen to the fight that blew up in our kitchen yesterday. And so it became a soup of everybody's issues, which was a great another safety valve, because if anything was too close to the bone, I could always say to my wife, yeah, that wasn't me, sweetie. That was the other guy.
I was just about to ask you, was there
Yeah, no, he can hide behind the other guy.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is actor-comedian Paul Reiser. He's appearing a week from today at the Carnegie of Homestead Music Hall. Some people might not know that you were a music major in college, Paul, in piano and composition, and that you actually co-wrote the theme song for Mad About You. So next Friday, will you have a piano at your disposal? Play a few times for the audience?
That won't happen. I've never had been tempted to combine the two. I've always played piano. I always loved music, but it never has anything to do. Because, well, why don't you do it? You love music. Why don't you do it in your act? I said, well, I also like eating, but I don't bring a sandwich on stage. I don't think that everything has to be done at the same time. And in fact, the music that I always like, the music that I tend to write, is really gut-wrenching, sad stuff. I like somber music, and which is the opposite of stand-up. So it would probably tank the show if I combined it.
Where would we find this contemplative, sad music you've written? Do you put it out there?
It's for good or for bad. It's always been stuff that I just privately play around with. Although I did an album years ago with a great singer songwriter named Julia Fordham, who I was she's a British singer who's just fantastic, and I had heard her on the radio and was a huge fan, and we ended up becoming friends. And it was about something 5-6 years ago. We happened to bump into each other after a few years, and I, having not seen her, and I said, "Oh, I'm starting to write some music. Maybe we should write a song." And we wrote a song, and I gave her the music, and she took it away and turned it into a song. And came back, and I was like, "Wow, that's really great." And we said, "Let's do another one." And suddenly, we had an album's worth. So we put out an album, and you can get it on iTunes. It's called "Unusual Suspects," Julia Fordham and me, and we wanted to call the album "Why So Sad," because every song, it's a song about a love that just died, a love that will die, a love that you wish would do you a favor and die. It's just about, there's a lot of melancholy in it, but they're really lovely songs, and she's just a killer writer and a wonderful singer. So I'm very proud of that one.
Well, you know, they say that, they didn't coin the phrase "tears of a clown" for nothing, Smokey Robinson.
I understand they did. They coined it for nothing. It was absolutely free, and nothing came of it. They said, "Why did we coin it if nobody's going to use it?"
But I guess what I was getting at was that there's that they say there's a side of comedians, of people who are funny, yeah, that inwardly there are things that they're holding in and.
No, I don't really subscribe to that. I don't think there's tears of a clown. I think there's tears of everybody, and there's there's silly goofy of everybody, and if there's a guy who's a classical violinist, I'm sure he goes home and he can watch a Jerry Lewis movie. And you don't have to stay in one mode. And I think the people who come to see a comedy show, I think the next day can watch a movie that moves them to tears. And I think everybody's got it all in them. And what's fun about stand-up, I mean, you're getting that side. People are coming to the theater because they want to laugh and because they know you, they have a feeling they're going to enjoy it. And, I love that live, that's a response you don't get in any other venue. You don't get TV, people can watch a show, but it's weeks and months later, sometimes it's years later when you finally get a project on the air or a movie out in the theaters. And stand-up is just so instantaneous, and it's simple. It's not easy, but simple in the sense there's no magic to it. There's no tricks to it. It's just you're on stage and talking to people, and they laugh, and then you all go home.
And they'll have that opportunity Friday, February 12th.
They will. Yes. Talk about coining for nothing. I don't want to end up coming to Pittsburgh for nothing, so I'm hoping that your lovely listeners will drive down. And rumor has it won't be freezing and snowing next week.
Well, it can't be, I shouldn't say this, but it can't be much worse than what we're experiencing this week.
But, just in case, I'm going to bring a jacket.
And that might be a good idea.
I think that would be the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, California.
Pack a sweater.
Yeah. Now, of course, people can also see you in the recently released movie Concussion about Dr. Bennett Omalu's discovery.
Shot in Pittsburgh.
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy, yes, or CTE in professional,
yes,
football players,
yes,
is at the heart of the story. And much of that movie, as you just said, was filmed in Pittsburgh. Were you here when you filmed your scenes?
Yeah, it was shot all in Pittsburgh. And I'm in it very quickly. And I tell my friends, if you didn't know I was in it, you wouldn't know I was in it. It was a small part, and it got trimmed out. So you go, oh, there he is. And but it was a great film. I hope more people go to see it and check it out in whatever ways they can. And it was this wonderful story. It was a true life story. Will Smith plays this Nigerian-born doctor who was quite brilliant and had like 12 different medical degrees, and he knew nothing of football and happened to be working in Pittsburgh in the coroner's office and came across the bodies of some ex-Steelers. And he knew nothing, but he was concerned and thought something was amiss that relatively young men had such severe brain injuries. And he did some research thinking that he was helping, and came upon the resistant forces of organized sports and said, yeah, well, maybe that's not quite true. And so it was a really David and Goliath story. And Will Smith was pretty terrific in this movie.
Well, here on the show, we have quite a connection to that movie. We had Dr. Amalu on the show.
Oh, there you go.
He was here for the premiere.
And,
and also Cyril Weck, played so brilliantly by Albert Brooks,
yes,
was a guest on this show.
Oh, great.
So
so you got it covered. Yeah. I have nothing to add then. You can leave me out of the whole conversation.
I did see you in the movie, though. So
that was you. Okay,
I know nobody. You were there.
Good. I didn't make it up.
I wanted to talk some of about some of your other more recent adventures. Last year, you made your theatrical debut in Woody Allen's Writer's Block.
And it was actually a while ago. It was 2003.
Oh, was it really?
Yes, it might have been a typo. 2013. That was my the only time I've ever been in a play, and since college, really. It was the last time I had been on a stage doing theater. And it was a sort of couldn't say no. It was Woody Allen going to be directing, for his first time directing theater, 2 one-act plays that he wrote. And in a small, I think it was a 99, maybe a 200-seat theater. And, you know, that was just a joy to be doing his words and have him there, you know. And it felt like high school. It felt like a local theater where we got a simple stage and we're going to just work on this and rehearse it and get it right. And but yet you're working with a major comedy force of the last, 100 years. So it was very thrilling and really fun to be doing his words with him sitting there trying to make it funnier together.
Yeah, what's that like? What's it like to work with him?
Well, it's funny because I had friends who had worked in film with him, and they all said, oh, he's really, everybody's intimidated, but he's really delightful and very easygoing, and he doesn't give you much direction. He just, once he casts you in a movie, he just lets you do your thing and you move on. But in theater, there's no moving on. So we got this much more extended stay. We got to stay with him at the rehearsals for 4 or 5 weeks, where he would watch it, and we'd play together, and then after each preview, he'd come backstage and he'd have notes for us, and I thought, well, this is unbelievable. And it was funny for me to watch his process, because here he was, obviously, with so many great classic films and so much work behind him, and he was still just as diligent, and he was confused. Anytime a joke wouldn't work one night, he said, I don't understand. How come that line didn't work? It worked yesterday, and why would it not work today? And I would think, are you kidding? How long have you been doing this? Do you not know? Do you not know that it doesn't work? Because in film, it works. You lock it, it's done. In theater, no, who knows what happened? Maybe I said it differently, or maybe the audience was different. And it was very heartwarming for me to watch a veteran of his stature be just as perplexed as a newcomer by the elusive nature of comedy. One of the things, I'm working on a couple of TV projects, and one of them is I'm very excited about it. It's a show. It's about a young kid in 1972 from the Midwest who lands a job, sort of stumbles his way into a job at the lowest level of the Tonight Show. And so he's backstage in the world of Hollywood, and we're doing this in conjunction with Carson's company, and so we have the exclusive rights to all the film, all the footage of his shows. So it's sort of using actual footage, but putting our characters and telling the story. And it was a very exciting time, for a comic to look back at. Carson's show was everything. That was the highest peak of the rainbow. That was as far as you can see on the horizon. And that time in 72 is when it just moved to California, and it was I wasn't there yet, but it was a very volatile time, and television was very different, and Johnny Carson loomed large in a way that nobody really can today. He was singular, and his show was a singular sort of beacon, and everybody would go to bed watching Johnny. And a lot of shows went up against him, but nobody ever really could compete, because he was the king of late night. So that's a show that I'm writing and producing, but I'm not going to be in it. But that's something that hopefully we're going to get off the ground this year.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Looking forward to that.
I did this other show that I'm actually on. I'm just acting on it, called Red Oaks, which is on Amazon. And it's also a period piece. It's 1985, and it takes place at a country club in suburbs of New York, and it's a sort of coming age also. It centers on this 20-year-old kid who's not sure what to do with his life, and he's just working at a country club. And I play this sort of big shot of the country club, this very big fish in a very small pond, and who's a really kind of a bit of a nasty guy. And so it's a very fun character to play, and it's really lovely, you know, to see you can do shows that would not have been done today. You asked about, you know, Diner being done. Now there are shows, certainly TV shows being done that would not have been done 10 years ago, where, you know, suddenly you're Amazons and Netflix and Hulus, and you can do a 10-episode season, and many of them very offbeat and non-conventional, and it's really a great time to be watching and also to be creating this stuff.
It sounds like you have a lot of great stuff coming our way, so we'll look forward
to it. But nothing as great as coming to Carnegie Hall.
Exactly.
Yes.
Which, again, is a week from today.
A week from today, so I should start. Pack a sweater and pack a jacket, you suggest.
Yeah, and maybe bring some galoshes, too.
Galoshes. I'm glad we spoke. I was climbing out in shorts and flip-flops, but you have changed my mind.
Paul Reiser will be at the Carnegie of Homestead Music Hall next Friday, February 12th. He joined us by phone from Los Angeles. Paul, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your time. I'll see you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Great. Thanks.
Coming up, we'll preview this weekend's Pittsburgh International Auto Show. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.
Tell me why I love you like I do. Tell me who can stop my heart as much as you. Tell me all your secrets and I'll tell you most of mine. They say nobody's perfect, but that's really true this time. I don't have the answers,